Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
The EV price war spreads to China. Plus, the race to subsidize the industries of the future is leaving many smaller players behind.
What appears to be this unwinding of globalization could make it harder for other countries in the future to follow the development trajectory of countries like China and South Korea.
And a self-styled anarcho-capitalist seizes the political spotlight in Argentina. It's Monday, August 14th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The slowdown in China's economy is starting to hurt corporate America. Companies that are embedded in China's ailing manufacturing, construction, and export industries are reporting weaker sales and, in some cases, warning of further trouble to come as growth grinds to a near halt. And Asia corporate reporter Dan Strumpf told us that the slowdown is registering in earnings results across a range of U.S. companies as well.
Companies like Caterpillar, DuPont, one company in particular, Danaher, which is a big maker of life sciences equipment, posted a pretty significant drop in orders from China in one of their major business segments just in the last couple of months. And there is a real fear that this downturn in China sort of spreads elsewhere. I mean, some companies are starting to report some early indications that this might be happening. One company that discussed this dynamic was a chip company called Microchip Technology, and they're based in Arizona. And their CEO was discussing signs of a slowdown in Europe because some of their European customers export onwards to China, and their export market in China is doing less well. And so you're seeing some early indications that this downturn is starting to reverberate in other markets.
Meanwhile, shares of Chinese electric vehicle makers have slumped today on news of a new price war. EV makers like Zeekr and Netta have started to cut prices again, and Tesla responded this morning by slashing prices of both its Model Y long range and Model Y performance cars in China by roughly $2,000. As reporter Sherry Queen explains, that ends a de facto truce between EV makers in China.
There are so many EV companies in China and also Tesla, and China is a big market. They all want a market share. And the best way to capture market is to give a discount or cut prices. Because China's economic recovery isn't as fast as expected. And at this point, they are all trying to boost consumption in some way and to attract more consumers. And right now, it just turned into like this price competition among EV makers.
Analysts from Citi say the price war is likely to impact margins and cash flow in early 2024, with fourth quarter demand for EVs this year also expected to be weak. And state and local officials in Hawaii are facing growing scrutiny over wildfires in Maui last week that are now the deadliest in the U.S. in more than 100 years. At least 96 people were killed in the blaze that reduced the town of Lahaina to rubble, though residents are bracing for a much higher death toll as the search for victims continues. To date, exiled residents who lost loved ones, homes, and businesses have received little information about what caused the fire, why it became so destructive, and whether officials could have better warned the public once the fires grew. Hawaii sent out more than a dozen alerts last week using its public alert and warning system, though Governor Josh Green has said it isn't known if Maui's warning sirens functioned properly. And residents and visitors have said in interviews that they didn't hear sirens once the fire started or as they fled. Coming up, the world's biggest economies are spending big on industrial subsidies, but rising protectionism is leaving behind a growing list of countries that can't pay up. We've got that story and much more after the break.
Technology can make the world better. At UST, we're building a future where people everywhere are empowered to live better lives.
It's transformation you can feel.
And you don't have to do it alone.
We believe in the power of technology to transform businesses and build a better world.
We have previously reported on how huge U.S. subsidies have sparked a cutthroat race to win the industries of the future. The Biden administration's Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA, has prompted many companies to invest in new U.S.-based factories for production of critical products such as chips and EV batteries, and in the process led the EU and Japan to counter with their own green energy support packages. But as journal reporting shows, some smaller players are getting left behind, and surprisingly, it's industrialized nations such as the UK and Singapore. Our Ed Ballard is across this story, and he joins me now with more. Ed, tell us about some of the examples. Obviously, the IRA is one of them, but there are others, right, of aggressive industrial policy at present sort of succeeding.
Well, certainly the Biden administration subsidies stand out. They've really changed the game. The journal reported recently there's been over $100 billion in U.S. clean tech investment plans announced since the Inflation Reduction Act was announced last year. And that has set off a sort of chain reaction. One notable example in Europe is that Germany's offering $11 billion in subsidies to Intel to set up shop and do more manufacturing there. And the European Union itself is trying to enable that with its own support package, which revolves around, in part, relaxing the European rules on state aid, how much money countries are allowed to give their own industries.
So the US, Germany, the EU, able to come to the table with quite substantial investments here. And yet, as you report, there's a bit of a bifurcation, right? There's those who have the resources to do this and those that don't, and quite a number of countries who are on the other side of things.
There are two main categories of country that might be caught on the wrong side of this. And the first is the what you might think of as a sort of the free trading nation. The UK might be the best example of that one, especially because just a few years ago, the UK left this enormous trading bloc, the European Union. And that, as it turned out, happened at this pretty inconvenient time, because right at that moment, it was right before Joe Biden blew a whistle and said, right, the rules of the game have changed. We're now all competing to attract investment in these industries of the future. It's not a globalized free trading world. And that sort of has caught the United Kingdom short. It just doesn't have enough money to throw the kind of subsidies around that the Biden administration is doing, even if it wanted to. And the other one is it's now outside this giant trading block, which is a huge advantage that the European Union has, is it can say to companies around the world, look, if you set up shop here, put your factory here, you can sell to these hundreds of millions of people. That's a huge bargaining chip that the European Union has. Singapore is another example of a country that might fall into this category. And Singaporean politicians have expressed concerns about how this shift in global economic policy will affect that country.
Though it's not just industrialized countries that are struggling to keep up here, right?
The other category, I'd say, are the countries that are trying to do what China and South Korea, places like that, did a generation ago, and climb the economic ladder by playing to their economic strengths, deciding what they're going to focus on in their economy, and growing that way. So, for example, you have a place like Indonesia, which is very rich in nickel, which is suddenly a critically important commodity for the energy transition. Every electric battery needs nickel. And of course, what Indonesia would like to do is to rise up the value chain, do more of its processing of the nickel, add more value there, create high-value jobs, perhaps attract companies to go and build their batteries there as well. And now, suddenly, if they're competing not just with the established players like China and South Korea, but also, suddenly, there's this new player in town, the United States, it's doubly difficult for them to attract investment dollars. And they have proposed responses to this. For example, some of these countries could form a cartel of critical minerals that would allow them some more leverage. But it's difficult to see how those will play out.
What could we be looking at, both in the UK and more globally, if this gulf between the haves and the have-nots of aggressive industrial policy continues to widen?
A lot of economists would be concerned that this will make things more expensive. If every country is trying to build their own manufacturing supply chains to build the same things that everyone else is building, there'll be some duplication. You could argue that those companies won't be focusing on what they're strongest at, and so perhaps that makes everything more expensive. An important question is to what extent this gusher of money in the US expands the global pie of money available for these critical industries in the future. To what extent is this a zero-sum game? And there's certainly a risk that developing countries could be shut out of the globalized free trading system, which has had advantages in powering growth and in some cases lifting people out of poverty. So there's a risk that this unwinding of globalization could make it harder for other countries in the future to follow the development trajectory of countries like China and South Korea.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Ed Ballard, who writes our terrific climate and energy newsletter. Ed, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great to be here.
To Argentina now, where the country's political establishment has been jolted by far-right outsider Javier Milei. Tapping into anger against the country's political class, Milei won a primary election yesterday by beating out fellow conservatives and Argentina's ruling Peronist coalition. Argentina is currently living through its worst economic crisis in a generation, with inflation running at 116% and around 40% of Argentines living in poverty. Milei, who has said he would dollarize Argentina's economy and dissolve its central bank, celebrated with supporters last night and directed criticism at the country's political caste.
He said, "Today we are the most voted force because we are the true opposition. We are the only ones who want a real change. Because remember, a different Argentina is impossible with the same old people."
Sunday's results raise uncertainty for Argentina's political system, which has remained relatively stable in recent years despite the economy's upheaval. Presidential elections are set for October. Now to a twist in the legal case involving President Biden's son, Hunter. His legal team is claiming that the Justice Department reneged on a previously agreed-upon plea agreement and that there had been misunderstandings about the scope of immunity that was being agreed. Hunter Biden had been expected to plead guilty last month to a pair of misdemeanor tax counts, but abruptly reversed course and pleaded not guilty. That left the deal in limbo until Friday, when prosecutors said talks had broken down and Attorney General Merrick Garland named a special counsel to keep investigating and prosecuting Biden's tax and business dealings. Sunday's legal filing escalates a dispute that threatens to become a factor in next year's presidential election. U.S. Steel has turned down an unsolicited bid by rival Cleveland-Cliffs, halting a potentially transformative deal in the American steel sector. Cleveland-Cliffs yesterday offered $17.50 in cash per share, along with approximately one Cliffs share, valuing U.S. Steel at over $7 billion. According to Cleveland-Cliffs, U.S. Steel's board deemed the offer unreasonable while it mulls over its strategic alternatives. Merging the two companies would shrink the U.S. steel market to just three key players. And being an activist shareholder may have its perks, but this year, beating the market isn't one of them. Journal reporter Lauren Thomas says that after a tough 2022, activist hedge funds continue to trail the stock market as a whole, thanks in part to a drop in leveraged buyout activity that's effectively removed an arrow from their quivers.
Someone like Elliott or Jana Partners or Third Point will show up in a stock and either publicly or very much behind the scenes agitate for some sort of transaction. Now, so far this year, you look at deal volumes and they're down. So that in large part is why these funds have struggled to see some of the same returns that they've seen in past years, you know, when M&A volumes have been more robust. Activists, again, tend to target smaller and more mid-cap stocks. It's not often the Apple, Alphabet, or Meta that you see activists take stakes in. And those, ironically enough, it's about seven stocks, tech companies, that have been driving the market higher this year. So if they're also missing the boat on those trades, that's yet another reason why the returns haven't been as strong.
And finally, want to make a fortune in tech? Well, having AI skills on your resume might be helpful, at least judging from a viral job posting by Netflix that offered up to $900,000 in total annual compensation for a role on the company's machine learning platform. That is part of a broader trend of employers seeking candidates with AI skills, especially as the AI boom ushers in new cyber threats. Journal reporter Bob McMillan told us about one emerging threat that researchers and security professionals worry could lead to the theft of sensitive data or the leaking of corporate secrets.
Most interesting of all of these is something called prompt injection, which is a very plain language way of talking to an AI, something like ChatGPT, and basically talking it into doing something that it's not supposed to do. It can be anything from getting the AI to talk about how it's configured to saying something inappropriate, but it can also occasionally be used to get the AI to actually do something that it really shouldn't be doing. And so at the end of the day, the question is going to be, how are these AI systems integrated with other systems? And if the AI has access to private data, if it has access to your email, then things could be a lot worse with prompt injection attacks. And there's a possibility that we're going to see them used a lot more in the next couple of years as AI becomes more widely adopted.
And that was What's News for Monday morning. Additional audio for this episode came from Reuters. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Technology can make the world better. At UST, we're building a future where people everywhere are empowered to live better lives.
It's transformation you can feel.
And you don't have to do it alone.
We believe in the power of technology to transform businesses and build a better world.